Hi everyone, welcome back to the MedBullet Step 2 and 3 podcast. In today's episode, we cover the topic of rheumatic fever, found under the pediatrics section at medbullets.com. Let's begin with a clinical snapshot. A 10-year-old girl presents with a fever and migrating joint pains in the knees and elbows. She reports having had a sore throat a few days ago. On physical exam, she is febrile and has barely raised erythematous, serpentine-like lesions on her back. A rapid streptococcal test is positive, and there is an elevated erythrocyte sedimentation rate. She is given antibiotics for this disease. Let's continue with an introduction to rheumatic fever. Clinically, it is defined as acute inflammation of multiple systems caused by an immunologic reaction to group A streptococcus infection. In terms of the demographics, it tends to affect children and adolescents, and it is most common in developing nations. In terms of the location, it affects the mitral valve more often than the aortic valve, which is more often affected than the tricuspid valve, and it most commonly affects the high-pressure valves. Risk factors include poverty and overcrowding, and a preceding group A streptococcal pharyngitis. In terms of the etiology, this is typically due to inadequate treatment for group A streptococcal infection. With regards to the pathogenesis, there's an abnormal immune response to group A streptococcus. There's molecular mimicry between the streptococcal M protein and self proteins, including cardiac proteins, keratin, laminin, and vimentin. So this is an immune-mediated type 2 hypersensitivity reaction. The disease is characterized by carditis, arthritis, Sydenham's chorea, which is caused by antibodies that cross the blood-brain barrier and bind dopamine D1 and D2 receptors. Other characterizations of the disease include erythema marginatum and subcutaneous nodules. Conditions that are associated include pediatric autoimmune neuropsychiatric disorders associated with streptococcal infection, or PANDAS. This is believed to be an autoimmune condition caused by antibodies targeting the basal ganglia after group A streptococcal infection, and it results in acute onset of obsessive compulsive disorder and or tics. Moving on to the presentation, symptoms may include migratory joint pains, especially in the knees, ankles, and elbows, chest discomfort, and heart failure, but this may be rare. On exam, one may note fever, patients may have dyspnea, a new murmur on cardiac exam may indicate carditis, there may be a firm and painless subcutaneous nodules over bony prominences, which often occurs with carditis. One may note erythema marginatum, which is an evanescent flat or barely raised ring-like or serpentine lesion on the trunk, and one may also note Sydenham's chorea. This is involuntary, jerky, purposeless movements of the hands, feet, face, or tongue. In terms of further imaging, echocardiography is indicated when a murmur is auscultated on exam, suspicious for rheumatic heart disease, and it is indicated to confirm complications of acute rheumatic fever. Specific findings may include valvular abnormalities, which may include regurgitations or stenosis. In terms of further studies, there may be a positive throat culture or rapid antigen test for streptococcus. Labs may demonstrate an elevated anti-streptolysin O titer or ASO titer, as well as an elevated anti-deoxyribonuclease B titer. Electrocardiography may demonstrate a prolonged PR interval, which is suggestive of first-degree heart block. On histology, one may note Ashoff bodies. This is a granuloma with giant cells on the heart valves. One may also note Anischkow cells, which are enlarged macrophages within Ashoff bodies. In terms of the differential, make sure to think about infective endocarditis, with distinguishing factors being that there is no association with group A streptococcal infection. There may be other findings including Roth spots, Osler nodes, Janeway lesions, and splinter hemorrhages on the nail bed, and one may note vegetations on valves on imaging. In terms of the diagnosis, remember that when making the diagnosis, this is based on clinical presentation, clinical or laboratory evidence of a preceding group A streptococcal infection, and confirmation is with two major Jones criteria, or one major Jones criteria and two minor criteria. Now let's review the Jones criteria. The major Jones criteria are an acronym. This stands for joints, referring to migratory arthritis. O looks like the heart, which refers to carditis. N stands for nodules, which are subcutaneous. E is for erythema marginatum. And S is for Sydenham's chorea. The minor criteria are fever, a prior strep infection, arthralgias, elevated erythrocyte sedimentation rate, elevated C-reactive protein, and first-degree heart block. In terms of treatment, remember that patients must be treated adequately with antibiotics to prevent rheumatic heart disease, and patients must then be put on long-term prophylaxis to prevent a recurrence. Medical options include penicillins. This is indicated for all patients. Another option is macrolides. This is indicated for patients who are allergic to penicillin. Another option is non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. This is indicated for patients with joint pain or fevers. Complications related to rheumatic fever include rheumatic heart disease. And lastly, with regards to prognosis, remember that rheumatic fever occurs 2 to 3 weeks after pharyngitis, except for carditis and chorea. Carditis may occur after months, and chorea presents after months as well. And the risk of recurrence decreases with time. Now that we've discussed the major points relating to rheumatic fever, let's walk through some questions to apply what we've learned and get a sense of how the topic might be tested. For the first question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 27-year-old immigrant from Bolivia presents to the emergency department with a cough and shortness of breath. She immigrated to the United States 5 months ago and does not present with any medical records. The patient also complains of nausea and vomiting. Her temperature is 99.5 degrees Fahrenheit, or 37.5 degrees Celsius. Blood pressure is 90 over 65, pulse is 140 beats per minute, respirations are 18 breaths per minute, and oxygen saturation is 98% on room air. Cardiac exam reveals an apical murmur. Pulmonary exam reveals mild bibasilar crackles. On abdominal exam, you note increased abdominal girth without any tenderness. Neurological and musculoskeletal exams are within normal limits. Laboratory values are ordered, which demonstrate a hemoglobin of 12 grams per deciliter, hematocrit of 36%, leukocyte count of 4,500 per millimeter cubed with a normal differential, and a platelet count of 100,000 per millimeter cubed. Serum sodium is 139 milliequivalents per liter, chloride is 100 milliequivalents per liter, potassium of 4.4 milliequivalents per liter, bicarbonate of 24 milliequivalents per liter, BUN is 20 milligrams per deciliter, glucose is 220 milligrams per deciliter, creatinine is 1.1 milligrams per deciliter, calcium is 10.2 milligrams per deciliter, beta-HCG is 175,000 milliIUs per milliliter, and AST is 12 units per liter, ALT is 10 units per liter. An EKG is performed, which demonstrates an irregularly irregular rhythm without any discernible P waves. The patient is started on IV fluids. Which of the following is most likely present in this patient's past medical history? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, serpiginous dermatologic macular lesion. Choice 2, IV drug abuse. Choice 3, bicuspid aortic valve. Choice 4, myocardial infarction. Or choice 5, pulmonary hypertension. The best answer to this question is choice 1, serpiginous dermatologic macular lesion. This pregnant immigrant patient is presenting with shortness of breath, atrial fibrillation, and an apical murmur, suggesting a diagnosis of mitral stenosis. The most common cause of mitral stenosis is rheumatic fever, which can present with erythema marginatum, which demonstrates a serpiginous dermatologic macular lesion with the pale center. Mitral stenosis presents with a rumbling apical murmur associated with a diastolic snap. Patients can experience symptoms such as hoarseness and dysphagia as the left atrium enlarges and compresses adjacent structures. Dilation of the atria can disrupt the cardiac conduction system and result in atrial fibrillation. Symptoms of mitral stenosis are typically worsened in expanded volume states, such as pregnancy. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choice 2. IV drug abuse can cause damage to the tricuspid valve, resulting in tricuspid regurgitation. IV drug abusers could present with bacterial endocarditis and a systolic murmur heard along the left sternal border, which would be suggestive of tricuspid regurgitation. Choice 3. A bicuspid aortic valve could predispose a patient to early calcification of this valve and aortic stenosis. Aortic stenosis would present with a systolic murmur heard along the right upper sternal border that radiates to the carotids. Choice 4. Myocardial infarction suggests ischemic cardiac damage, which could cause a patient to present with atrial fibrillation. However, this patient's age and demographics makes this unlikely. Choice 5. Pulmonary hypertension classically presents with shortness of breath in a female patient. This patient's apical murmur associated with an expanded volume state suggests a diagnosis of mitral stenosis. Finally, a bullet summary. Mitral stenosis occurs secondary to untreated rheumatic fever and presents with more severe symptoms during volume expanded states, such as in pregnancy. For the second question, consider the following clinical scenario. A 34-year-old woman presents to the clinic with complaints of joint pain for the past several weeks. The pain initially began at the right knee, but is now spread to her left ankle, right elbow, and right wrist. The pain is rated as 5 out of 10 and does not limit her day-to-day activity. She denies any stiffness, fever, lightheadedness, dysuria, chest pain, shortness of breath, or chills. She endorses a non-pruritic rash on her back for the past 3 days. A physical exam demonstrates mild joint effusion and tenderness at the right wrist and elbow with full range of motion. There is a holosystolic murmur heard best at the apex. Which of the following is the most likely associated with the patient's presentation? And the answer choices are: Choice 1, antibodies against SNRNPs. Choice 2, positive rheumatoid factor. Choice 3, previous pharyngeal infection. Choice 4, previous viral illness. Or choice 5, purulent vaginal discharge. The best answer to this question is choice 3, previous pharyngeal infection. This patient likely has rheumatic fever, as demonstrated by her joint pain, erythema marginatum, as evidenced by the pink, non-pruritic rash involving the trunk, and carditis, as evidenced by the holosystolic murmur. It is a sequela that can occur 2 to 4 weeks following a previous pharyngeal infection, secondary to group A streptococcus. Acute rheumatic fever is an inflammatory disease that typically develops 2 to 4 weeks following a group A strep pharyngeal infection. The disease is diagnosed based on the Jones criteria, 2 major criteria or 1 major and 2 minor criteria. Major manifestations include arthritis, carditis, Sydenham's chorea, erythema marginatum, and subcutaneous nodules. Minor criteria include fever, arthralgia, elevated acute phase reactants, and prolonged PR interval on electrocardiogram. It is worth noting that in patients who present with isolated chorea or indolent carditis, the diagnosis of acute rheumatic fever is presumed, as the finding is highly specific. Treatment involves long-acting intramuscular penicillin G benzathine, which eradicates group A strep carriage. Patients who develop acute rheumatic fever are at higher risk for recurrence, especially if they develop subsequent group A strep pharyngitis, and are usually placed on long-term antibiotic prophylaxis with penicillin G benzathine. Let's also discuss why the other choices are incorrect. Choice 1. Antibodies against SNRNPs describes anti-Smith antibodies, which is a specific antibody for systemic lupus erythematosus. Although patients with SLE can present with joint pain, rash, and carditis, the rash is a characteristic malar rash across the face, not a pink rash on the trunk. In addition, arthritis in SLE tends to be symmetrical instead of unilateral, as seen in this patient. Choice 2. Positive rheumatoid factor is usually associated with rheumatoid arthritis, a form of inflammatory arthritis. Patients often complain of morning stiffness that improves throughout the day. Symmetric, small joints of the hands are often involved. Carditis and erythema marginatum are not typical presentations of rheumatoid arthritis. Choice 4. Previous viral illness such as parvovirus B19 infection can also result in a rash and arthralgia. However, The rash is a characteristic slap cheek rash, and the arthralgia is similar to that of rheumatoid arthritis. For example, morning stiffness, symmetric, and involvement of the small joints of the hands. Choice 5. Purulent vaginal drainage is associated with gonococcal infection, which can present as septic arthritis. Patients often complain of an extremely painful and swollen joint, often of the knee, with a limited range of motion. This patient's pain is moderate, and her physical exam is unimpressive for septic arthritis. Finally, a bullet summary. Acute rheumatic fever often follows group A streptococcus tonsillopharyngitis and can present with arthritis, erythema marginatum, carditis, Sydenham's chorea, and subcutaneous nodules. That's all for this review about rheumatic fever. We hope that was helpful. This is the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast, a daily audio review session from MedBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for medical student education. As a reminder, you can follow along with these podcast episodes by reviewing the topics directly on MedBullets.com. You can listen to these episodes on the MedBullets website or phone app while reading through the topic. If the MedBullets podcast has been valuable to you, we'd be thrilled if you consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here, on the MedBullets Step 2 and 3 podcast.